Welcome to Jade Explains Death, a place where the more morbid the curiosity, the better. We'll be confronting the one thing humans fear most, death. Each episode will be dedicated to a manner of death, and I will paint a vivid picture of how each would feel, as well as share some of the darkest yet most interesting real-life stories. Get ready, because we're about to embark on an adventure now. Welcome back, loves. It's time to begin a brand new exploration into death. Of course, I must mention that my content may be upsetting to some and for mature audiences. Listener discretion advised. This is especially true for this week's episode because we're really going deep into a dark rabbit hole. I can't imagine anything that could be more disturbing than this episode's theme. It's time to venture to a place that's only safe to analyze from afar. It's time to explore the nefarious and terrifying world of cartel killings. This episode is especially for my TikTok family that have requested the Funky Town Cartel video or Guerrero Flaying. Organ harvesting, human trafficking, death camps, drugs, and skinnings are all synonymous with cartels. There are countless innocent people who are petrified to just exist. In fact, looking at a member the wrong way can cost them their life. And death doesn't come quickly. It comes with a price tag of hours to even days of extreme torture that you wouldn't even find in a horror movie. In recent years, several cartels have taken to the internet to share their homemade videos of killings. These videos should never be consumed by the public. I have watched two, basically in order to gain some perspective for this episode, and let me tell you, I wish that I hadn't. No matter how brave you are, there's a level of trauma that comes from watching them that no warm-blooded person can prepare for. I also feel like when a lot of people watch these videos, it offers them a sense of validation that we do not want to give them. I have since had many nights where certain horrid images and sounds flood my rapid channel-changing brain, and it has reduced me to tears and feeling incredibly ill, and I'm not ashamed to say so. That being said, let that be a bit of a warning of what is to come. I will be going into detail of what transpires in some of these videos, as well as explaining what it actually does to your body and brain. You should be well acquainted enough with the content of those videos to avoid ever watching them, but even just listening to this may cause you to have a very real and visceral reaction. I never want to cause anyone trauma or serious triggers. This is strictly for anyone who has an undying curiosity about the subject matter. Organ harvesting is something that I will admit I used to believe was mostly conspiracy. That was really naive of me because it's happening under our noses. It is a big means of income, and there's always people out there who are trying to hustle and make money, not caring what it does to people. Though it seems to be less frequent in places like America, parts of the UK and Canada, it does still happen. We likely just don't always hear about it. I first opened my eyes to how big this problem really is when I covered the Missing Girls of Panama case. The area where Lisanne Froon and Chris Kramers vanished is close to an area that's known for cartel activity. The official story coming out of Panama is that the two Dutch girls got lost on the Pianista Trail and injured themselves, leaving them stranded to die to the elements. There are many theories about what people believe truly happened to the girls, and organ harvesting is one of the bigger ones. So, of course, I did some investigation into the likelihood of this actually being the case, and I found that it's certainly a possibility. Okay, let me rewind a little because you need to know more about this crazy, puzzling mystery. Lisanne and Chris, who were in their early 20s, were on a long trip abroad. Their end plan was to volunteer to school near Poquete, Panama. Once they arrived, the school claimed they were not ready for them to begin, which is odd because they exchanged several emails confirming the date. Basically, they were gifted with an extra week of time to explore the area, but both girls were pretty perturbed by this. The same day that they learned of this news, they embarked on a hike on the beautiful Pianista Trail. Along the way, they decided to document this with their digital camera. Several hours into their hike, something appears to go chillingly wrong. Attempts to phone emergency were made from their phones, though unsuccessful. Heartbreakingly, they did not connect. Neither girl ever returned to their host home. They basically vanished without a trace at first. Several painstaking searches of the trail rendered absolutely nothing, aside from some suspicious behavior from a local tour guide who allegedly had plans to take the girls on a hike the following day. He basically showed up at their host home in a frenzy, demanded entry to their room, and strangely was granted it. So, coincidentally, that was the same man who was in charge of several searches for the girls. Nearly 2 months later, Some of the girls' belongings were located in the jungle, which included a backpack which was filled with their digital camera and cell phones. This area had already been searched several times, and these things apparently did not actually exist back then. Now, all of a sudden, they're there. Again, strange. But what's even worse is once investigators took a peek at the digital camera, they found some pretty chilling photos. There was a long sequence of photos taken on the evening of April 8th. The girls vanished on April 1st. And what's strange about these photos is they are unlike any photos that were taken previously. They are of the night sky in different areas of the jungle. One photo appears to be of a little area where the girls seem to be using reflective wrappers to maybe try to beckon help or even just mark their location. But there's also one photo completely deleted. This photo had to have been deleted on a laptop. And this photo that was deleted was taken in between the normal photos of the girls having fun on the hike and the creepy nighttime photos. The reason why this had to be deleted on a laptop is because on a digital camera, if you manually delete a photo, the next photo that you take will replace that photo number. So it will appear like nothing was ever deleted. This camera was hooked up to a laptop and deleted on the actual laptop. But neither girl had possession of a laptop on their hike, which points to the fact that a third party was involved. Unless if the police deleted it for some strange reason, it is very coincidental placing where this photo was deleted. So, of course, you know, people went crazy with their theories, and they believe that maybe they snapped a photo of the potential assailant or murderer, and that person went back to delete it. Then, quite some time after finding the backpack, various bones were found in the jungle that were later ID'd to belong to Lisanne and Chris. Of course, these findings were also very strange. Lisanne's bones were found with a normal level of decomposition for the amount of time that she was likely dead. Chris's bones, however, appeared to be bleached. There was no trace of skin left, and phosphorus was detected on those bones. They honestly looked like they belonged to a victim who had potentially been missing in that jungle for years. Additionally, only 33 bones collectively were found of the two girls, so where are the rest of their remains? Sadly, I have been at this case for years. We will likely never know what exactly came of the two young girls, but we do know that others have gone missing in that area before and since. We also know that at least four of Mexico's largest organized crime groups have ties to areas near the Pianista Trail. The gang activities that have been detected include drug and human trafficking. Yes, organ harvesting and rival gang killings. Of course, it strictly falls on the back of the Cenafront, an extremely small group of special forces, to patrol the borders and keep the area safe from the cartel activity. Anywhere that has a spiked amount of cartel-led human trafficking has an organ harvesting problem. If a person's deemed unfit to serve a purpose while alive, they're basically scrapped for their organs. Organized crime groups are all about their bottom line. Any possible chance that they have to earn a profit, they take. Sadly, in areas like Panama, civilians in smaller villages are often poor. Not only that, but afraid for their lives when the cartel is in their neighborhood. It isn't out of the question that a civilian might abduct tourists to turn over to the cartel as a plea for safety or money. The Lost Girls case has luckily opened our eyes to the fact that there are a lot of warm-hearted people in Panama as well. A small family from a surrounding village turned over the girls' belongings to authorities knowing that it could put a target on their backs. Also, many people volunteered hours and days of their time to help search. I definitely feel like it's worth mentioning. We can become pretty jaded by stories like these. It can cause us to vilify people who don't deserve to be vilified. If you were to find yourself an unlucky recipient of an organ trafficking surgery, the only good news that I can offer is that you will be put out in one way or another before they slice into you. And though the tools may be unbecoming and possibly unsanitized, it won't matter much because you're not meant to live to feel the repercussions. Sure, a sadistic killer might prefer to have you awake when they dismember you and dig for your organs. Sadists feed off your agony and fear. In a case of organ trafficking, the big ticket items are your actual organs. Having you squirming around and screaming may hinder the retrieval process, and nobody's going to purchase nicked, damaged, or ruptured organs. It is best for the profits for you to be completely out. This can be done with barbiturates like phenobarbital or something similar. It can be done with a cocktail of narcotics and benzos like Valium or Xanax. Sometimes that cocktail may even involve forcing you to inhale chloroform. Or it can be done with blunt force trauma to the head. If it's your kidneys and liver thereafter knocking you out the old-fashioned way will not hinder retrieval. I really hate to say it, but it might be the easiest way to go at the hands of the cartel. It's time to get into the really fucked up details. It's time to discuss the rival cartel killings, which is likely the type of killing that we see in those terrible gore videos. First of all, one thing that I noticed right off of the bat in these videos was that both victims had been hooked up to an IV. Considering the horrors that each endured, all while never succumbing to shock or losing consciousness, it's safe to deduce that specific drugs were administered to keep them in a state of awareness. I tried to remind myself while watching these soul-scarring videos that the person being tortured was a member of a rival cartel. I said they would probably do the same thing to their attackers if given the first opportunity. But listening to the gurgles, screams, and various sounds of the victim kept me in a constant state where I couldn't help but humanize them. The sounds were honestly the worst part of the video for me. They were like a new level of sound wave that was capable of reaching deep inside of my guts. Immediately, their utter helplessness, agony, and wishing to be dead just resonated with me. Still does even now when I'm simply recalling the many mental afflictions that I experienced while watching. These videos clearly fucked me up. Both of the videos that I watched actually had a lot of similarities. Both victims had their faces flayed or completely skinned. This was done off camera or in the piece of footage that was never released. The Funky Town Cartel video gets its name because of the most memorable song played near the end of the video, which is Funky Town. I think this is most memorable because it played during some of the most disturbing aspects of the video, though the whole damn thing was treacherous. In that video, in addition to having his face flayed, both of his hands had been cut off by the time the video rolls. He was also bound with a type of wire, and his screams of agony begin right away. As you can imagine, having your hands recently cut off, having any kind of wire or binding near the wounds would just increase the throbbing agony. The killers in this video were not squeamish, obviously. Skinning a person is not something that can be done quickly. Back in the day when flaying was actually used as an execution method, there were steps involved that were necessary before the flaying could even begin. Skin doesn't just slide off the body the way it does on a grilled piece of salmon. The executed was either first put in boiling hot water, steamed for hours, and/or placed in the hot sun for an entire day. I suppose we could call this tenderizing? This really helped to cut off the long pieces of skin, though it really upped the ante on how punishing and brutal it was. Just imagine having the worst sunburn of your life. You basically feel radioactive. Just having a piece of clothing brush against the searing burn sends your nerves screaming, but it's far from over. A knife or other sharp instrument then penetrates your crispy flesh and it's shredded from your body. I used to think until this moment radiation poisoning was the worst death imaginable, and it is. It's one of them, but I think skinning has to be up there on the list. The customary procedure was to make an incision or cut all the way through the epidermis, derma, and hypodermis, your three layers of skin, and into the subcutaneous layer. I don't know how many flayings these killers had performed prior to making this gore video, but I can't imagine a cartel member being well-versed on the anatomy of skin. It's most likely that they cut and pulled, trial and error until they were able to get every last piece of flesh clean from this man's face. This likely took a minimum of an hour. They may have even used tools like a grater or potato peeler. As for cutting off the hands, there are a few tools known to be used by many cartel members that can cut through bone. Bear in mind that cutting the bones in the wrist takes less force than cutting a femur, sternum, or spine. I believe either a machete or axe was likely used, but I mean, even a bone saw could have been, and that may have been why it was done off camera. It might have been too loud, might have taken up too much space. I mean, who the hell knows? In that case, it could actually be done quickly. It may have taken a couple of hard thrusts on each and then they would be done. The sharp tools that we actually see in the video could not have been used for this part, and I will get into those in a little bit. Additionally, you can tell by the level of blood that was on the floor, this man had already lost so much bodily fluid. He was already heading, if not already, into hypovolemic shock or shock from blood loss. In normal circumstances, most people would likely already be unconscious or really heading in that direction. But as I mentioned, he was hooked to an IV that, in addition to uppers and drugs to keep him alert, he was likely given fluids or saline. This certainly will not stifle or stop shock from blood loss, but it can help a person remain conscious for a bit longer. There's no scale in this world that could portray the level of pain that this man was enduring. It just kept getting worse. While watching, I found myself muttering, "Please die, please fade, please not out," because I just felt my heart crawling up my throat. I felt so ill. My body would tingle in my hands, face, and eye sockets, all the places where this man had been tortured. I just wanted his suffering to end. I had to remind myself that this video was old and that he was dead and out of his misery, but somehow it didn't really help. Oh, when I describe this to you, I feel like I am a voyeur looking into something that's forbidden, and I'm explaining this information that should never be said out loud, but honestly, I just hope that it prevents you from ever watching. Something else happened to this man prior to the camera rolling. His eyes were pulled from their sockets. Again, this takes time. Our eyes are connected to our optic nerve, which is pretty thick and almost fibrous. So the nerve basically needs to be snipped in order to remove them. But he's so bloody. And honestly, I found my own eyes averting away from his socket. So I am not sure if you could see how far the removal went, if that makes sense. Let's discuss the trigeminal nerve for a sec. This nerve's located in our temples. When disturbed, harmed, or severed, it sends extreme shooting pain into your jaw, into the top of your head, basically in all directions, and it feels like you are being struck by lightning in the head. Considering the brutality that this man endured and where before the video, he definitely experienced this as well. And that brings us to the start of the video. The killers are heard laughing all throughout this torture. They are very pleased with themselves and unmoved by the horror they are inflicting. If I had to estimate how much time was taken off camera to get to this level, I would say at least 2 hours. 2 fucking hours this man was likely tortured before the camera even rolls. His hands were definitely cut off last. The amputations were the two wounds that would cause the most bleeding. Had it been done first, he would have already bled out already. I don't care what drugs he was on, he would be dead. Because the victim was screaming so wildly, the assailants took several measures to try and quiet him. I'm not sure if this was due to potentially being caught or just for the sake of them being able to hear their stupid playlist. I'm guessing the latter. One of these measures was to attempt to cut his throat with a sickle. A sickle is a farming tool used to cut grain. You've definitely seen them in horror movies before. They have a long, narrow, curved blade, and these can actually dull pretty easily, and it appeared that this one wasn't sharp enough. It only seemed to make surface cuts. Of course, the amount of blood all over his face and neck made it difficult to see. When that doesn't work, the sickle is jammed near his jaw, which only intensifies the screams. Next, a blade of a box cutter shoved into his mouth, probably an attempt to cut his tongue, perhaps off. This brought the horrid noises to a fever pitch. The screams transformed into just these animalistic, vibrating gurgles. This was the point of the video that made me break down in tears. Again, I rambled, "Oh my God, just kill him, stop, stop, stop." But they didn't. I might be recalling some of these details out of order. To be honest, I cannot go back to rewatch for reference. Eventually, the victim managed to wiggle his restraints loose. A pole was shoved in his mouth to restrain him further. The absolutely worst part of the entire video, aside from the screams, was when the victim instinctively touched his face. He couldn't see because his eyes were gone. He couldn't touch because his hands were gone. His face was just a bloodied, raw mess. You could sense that it was the very moment where everything became 100% apparent to him. He knew he was going to die, but this was when he realized there was no coming back. Even being a writer, it's tough to try and use words to explain how that moment felt to me. It was like I was in his body. I was experiencing every emotion of it. No matter how many deaths or true crime cases that I have covered, I still never fully grasped what humans are capable of. Not until that very moment. That was when monsters became so vivid and so real. Every nightmare that I've ever experienced has absolutely nothing on some people's reality. Something inside of me clicked. It changed me. And yeah, maybe it will eventually make me a better writer, but it also really fucks with me. This video does not conclude with the man dying. He remained alive and conscious through it all. The killers cut his throat using the box cutter over and over and over, maybe 20, 40, or 60 times. But he was still alive. When the camera stopped rolling, he was still moving and screaming. It feels impossible, but it was reality. This brings me to the 43 students who were abducted in Guerrero, Mexico. We know for a fact that at least some of these students are now dead. It's highly probable that their deaths were at the hands of a cartel. I find myself hoping for one thing, and it breaks my heart. I'm hoping that at least some of the students evaded torture and death by taking deals to join organized crime. The only reason that I hope for this is because they could still be alive. They could have potentially dodged going through anything like the man in those videos went through. I can 100% understand why a person would take that deal. I cannot blame. And this is another reason why I cannot help but humanize the rival cartel member who was tortured in that video. Let me start at the beginning. I cannot help but empathize with the families who wish to flee Mexico. After you hear this next story, you might completely change. On September 26, 2014, something unbelievable happened. A group of 100 students from the Ayotzinapa School, otherwise known as the Normal School, was preparing to attend a demonstration in Mexico City. This was basically a teacher's college. It was a place for boys to attend who came from farming families, where they could train to become future teachers and stay out of trouble. This school is a good thing. But a lot of local politicians do not see it that way, because the school is known to have leftist ideals, and apparently this does not fit with the known economic model of Mexico. The school had deals with bus companies where they would commandeer buses so students could be safely transported to and from demonstrations. The bus drivers would often stay on location to ensure the students' safe return. It was obviously known that the boys from the school could almost always be in some sort of danger. On this day, the students had just commandeered several buses when they were abruptly stopped by roadblocks. These roadblocks were put in place by local police. Within a matter of moments, bullets just start spraying at the bus, shattering windows, ricocheting off metal, even piercing some people. The students began crawling towards the exit. They went around the bus and basically used it to shield themselves from the gunfire. One brave student actually began filming with his phone as proof. At one point, he's heard yelling to the cops that they were all unarmed, demanding answers as to why they were doing what they were doing. Later on in the video, he yells that his friend has been shot. Sadly, his friend was shot in the head, which rendered him brain dead almost immediately. In all of the chaos, a number of students were able to safely flee from the gunfire, but it wasn't over for them. Several people caught bullets in this incident. The remaining students that were unable to flee were rounded up one by one by police and basically unofficially detained at gunpoint. In total, 43 students were hauled away that night. A student by the name of Julio Cesar Mondragon was one of the boys to run away from the scene. Initially, many were hopeful that he got away. The following morning, all hopes of that were murdered when his body was found. Of course, authorities attempted to blatantly lie about this discovery. He was found with his face completely skinned, his eyes missing, and shirt pulled over his head, revealing countless contusions. Is this starting to sound familiar? He had obviously endured extreme torture and brutality. Authorities claimed that he was dead when his skin was removed, and that it was a result of an animal attack done post-mortem. I can tell you, without a shadow of doubt, that his face was not skinned by an animal. As I mentioned, skinning a person is not an easy thing to do. Also, in the photo of his body, right after being found, there are telltale signs that it was done pre-mortem. Animals' teeth are not the right tool to do such a thing, nor are claws. You're more likely to see teeth marks, chunks of flesh missing, never every inch of a person's face removed. I think that officer who released this information was narcissistic. He believed he was smarter than the citizens of Mexico. He believed he was smarter than everyone. But he was actually a dumbass. He must live in his little fancy bubble funded by organized crime. He must not be aware that there are experts, that there's the internet, that there's freedom of press in so many countries. I find it insulting that he believed the parents of that boy were so simple-minded that they would just accept this, not even half-baked bullshit. You can debunk this claim in 12 seconds flat on Google. This was the MO of the cartels. I hate to do this to you. I hate to do this to me, but that brings us back to that horrible fucking Funky Town cartel video. I did not know when I first watched that video, the first and only time, that it was believed by many that the victim was actually Julio Cesar Mondragon. Not a rival cartel member at all. He was completely innocent, a freaking student who was on the right path in life. This has never been confirmed. It likely never will. I think that the only people on this planet who may know the answers are the assailants in the video, members of that cartel, and possibly Julio's parents, but I hope to fucking God that they never watched that video. If they did, they would probably know from the sounds and the movement whether it was their son. After the 43 students were rounded up by police and shoved into vehicles, their trail goes completely freezing cold. I don't even think the parents or the other students expected that at this point. Obviously, something nefarious was going on, but I don't think anyone quite grasped in that moment how disturbing this was about to get. The students who were able to escape the first incident later gathered in the streets, and they attracted journalists and other members from the press. They were outraged. They were confused. And they were yelling it at the top of their lungs to anyone who would listen. They wanted their friends back. But soon, as you can imagine, they attracted some unwanted attention. Two ominous vehicles were spotted near the scene, who did eventually leave. But these were vehicles that seemed to obviously be tied to the cartel. Were the students being watched? Around 15 minutes later, those vehicles returned with a vengeance and opened fire for a second time that night. There were obviously a lot of people who wanted those boys dead. So let's take roll call. You have the shady, evil police officers who shot at the students and kidnapped 43 of them. You also have several known organized crime groups with ties to the area that at least one likely had a hand in this. And you also have a fucked up mayor and his wife who had obvious motivations to want these boys gone, which we will get into shortly. Several more people were gravely wounded by gunfire. Three more died, including a woman who was simply a bystander in a nearby taxi cab. Reportedly, over 100 people were seeking treatment at hospitals by this point in the night. What is absolutely disgusting is the fact that the people who were shot in this incident were left laying in the streets, bleeding out for 4 hours before anybody came to their aid, before officers even pretended to give a damn. Also by this point, news of the events had spread. Many workers in clinics and hospitals were petrified to help anybody who had been harmed by these attacks. They were scared that police would retaliate against them for simply helping. This made it impossible for some of the wounded to ever get any medical care or help. In the days following these attacks, the distraught parents of the dead and missing had a hell of a time getting the attention of any officials. They were given the runaround and just more bullshit. This prompted some of the parents and members of the community who were outraged by this crazy to create their very own community-run policing group. They were not naive to the fact that this would be the only way to find those boys. This was incredibly dangerous for them to do. It's a testament to a parent's love. They were willing to go to the ends of the earth to find their children. In fact, when the group unearthed several mass graves in the hills where the cartel Guerrero Unidos had ties, they received death threats, and I guarantee you it was not the first time. The first mass grave contained 28 bodies. Tragically, the search group basically uncovered a clandestine graveyard. Once found, they had no choice but to turn this information over to the actual police. They were the only ones with resources to test the remains. Of course, these asshats couldn't be trusted, but the ball was in their court. The community group pleaded with the police to bring in an independent trusted group to test the remains, but they refused. They were obviously not at all concerned about the optics. They were in the pockets of the cartels. If they transferred that power to another independent group, they would lose the ability to protect them. The parents refused to let up. They were lost and destroyed from these events. They desperately wanted not only answers, but their boys back alive. They said that this was an attack by the state. The state took their sons alive. They wanted their sons back alive. They took to the streets with pictures of the missing. They went to any politician that they could to demand answers and help. They were loud. Their love was so apparent. Eventually, the government realized that the parents' love was so deep. They were never going to go away. They would always be a problem to them. So a plan was hatched and a story concocted. There's a good chance that some aspects of the story are true. I'm not alone when I say that I doubt the entire story is. The attorney general called a meeting with the parents. With his best plastic performance of crocodile tears, he explained that he had gotten very sad news from his investigation. Several officers and members of the Guerrero Unidos had been detained and questioned, leading to the discovery of the 43 missing students' remains. I imagine that the Unidos turned over a few members that were deemed trouble, members who were believed to be unloyal to the group. That way, they could continue on in their fucked up merry criming, and the investigation would end. It would appease the parents. But that was not all. It was also revealed that the local mayor and his wife, who had ties to a couple of cartels, had masterminded the entire event. On the same night of the demonstration, the mayor's wife was hosting an event that was basically meant to help secure her own following so that she could run after her husband's term. The demonstration was bad for business. Of course, being in the pockets of cartels meant a lavish lifestyle. Why wouldn't the duo want to do everything they could to keep their gravy train going? The cartels, I'm sure, loved this as well. It was a win-win on both fronts. They likely sponsored the campaigns. And when the couple fled, it obviously pointed to the two being guilty of something. According to the state, this is what happened. The police ambushed the boys, kidnapped them, and turned them over to the Guerrero Unidos. The students were transported in a truck with a cage on the back. Several boys suffocated long before they reached their final destination due to everyone being crammed in and basically stacked. They were brought to a large dump where the Unidos individually shot and killed the boys who were still alive. They were then thrown into the dump with accelerant, plastic, tires, and other materials and set ablaze. Guards from the gang made sure that the fire remained burning for 15 hours until only fragment and ash remained. The leftovers were gathered up, placed in 8 separate bags, and thrown into the river. So back to the fucked up mayor and his wife. Jose Luis Abarca was the mayor of Iguala. His wife Maria was also very hands-on in his ruling, we'll call it. She made a lot of decisions. And she was also known to have several ties to known crime groups. After it was announced that both had potential involvement, they flew the coop. They were gone. They obviously were guilty of a lot of things that they did not wish to answer for. Those two assholes were eventually found at an abandoned house and arrested. But it is now 5 years later after they were detained and they have yet to face trial. They're incarcerated, but this seems like a ridiculously long delay considering how quick the attorney general was to want to close this case. The motive simply greed. They were lining their pockets during their time as mayor and mayor's wife and they wanted to keep that cash cow going. If the official story is true at all, that means the boys were shot to death. That's a lot of blood spilled over money. There are theories that the buses commandeered by the boys were actually hauling drugs or drug money, possibly from a rival cartel to the Unidos. This could have been what put the target on the boys' backs. Of course, if that was the case, it was completely unknown to the students. Not a single one of those boys should be dead today, but we know that they likely are. Being shot to death is a scary and degrading experience, but honestly, it would be better than being tortured. It would likely be one shot to the head, execution style, that would kill them quickly. Hopefully, it was close to instant for most. If it wasn't, they likely experienced only moments of pain. A bullet generates an immense amount of heat. It's ripping through your tissue and even bone at very rapid speeds. The heat's often felt before the pain. Gunshot victims often report not even realizing that they were shot at first. That makes it likely that the suffering endured was centered around the fear. I'm sure they were in a great state of fear from the moment bullets rained on the bus. Once abducted by police, I think deep down inside they knew they were going to die, but still clung on to hope. It's impossible not to in a situation like that. Once handed over to the cartel, their fate was sealed. As for the boys who were shot last, they had to watch as their friends were killed one by one. An absolutely harrowing and insufferable situation. That is, only if the official story is anywhere near true. Cartels are brutal and soulless. They lack the fundamental ability to value human life. They value money and power above all. After watching those videos, it's apparent that at least some cartel members actually enjoy the act of killing. They enjoy hearing the screams. They love to feel the blood of others on their hands. They get off on bringing a person over the edge of maddening suffering. They aren't animals, because animals have souls. Animals act in defense. They're simply human hybrids. They've dulled their senses. They've wiped away their own humanity, one skinning and killing at a time. I could collectively explain how each individual act of torture would feel, but it is humanly impossible to be able to scale the agony of the victims in those videos. Anything that you or even I am capable of imagining, the reality transcends. Because when you put those acts together in one place and time on one person, you create a powder keg of misery. It's a secret recipe for unfathomable supernatural pain. It shatters the mold. The cartel's brutality doesn't start and end with the missing 43, or the victims of trafficking, or organ harvesting, or drug overdoses. There are hidden away places that are soaked with human decomposition, screams, and snuffed out energy. Death camps, if you will. Places where the only thing cooked in the kitchens are human remains. One of those places was recently discovered and searched by the community policing group. These individuals donate their days and their weeks, and weeks and their months, to sift for bones and try to collect evidence among the ruins, in which there are many. This ranch has drag marks of blood along every hallway, and handprints permanently etched on the walls made of DNA. In the kitchen sits a large crematorium filled with piles of ashes. An outdoor brick oven was converted into a second crematorium to keep up with the demand of the many victims being funneled in to meet the most disturbing ends. If you were to walk anywhere near this hellhole, your nightmares would soon have smells. You'd find yourself haunted night after night by the stench of sweet sausage, burnt hair, rotting eggs, and metals. It's now an impossible feat to rid this house of the permanent smell of death and decay. How many other ranches exist out there like this one? There are currently, officially, 22,000 disappeared people in Mexico. This is just the number that we've been told. I'm sure that it's only a fraction of the people who've actually been forced to vanish by organized crime groups. In the end, those mass graves discovered by the community police did not contain remains of the missing boys. They did, however, contain remains of some of those disappeared people. Sadly, with such a corrupt government, loved ones of the missing will likely never know that the bodies have been found. The remains found in the plastic bags in the river, from the state's official story, were sent off to an independent college for testing. For years, it was just silence. But recently, several sets of bone fragments were identified as belonging to some of the missing boys.